We're going to start off the Q&A session with the questions posted online, and then once we get through these questions, if time allows, I'll open up the phone lines for questions. I'm just going to start at the top, and I'm going to put the questions out there to all three of you and just let whoever's appropriate jump in. Let's see here. Let me find the first one. What is the average daily container exchange volume among the three Class 1 railroads?
I can take that. This is Randy Butler. You know, this varies by location, of course. The largest one is Chicago. And I believe, Paul, we put together a case study that is available on our website at www.ctip-us.com that I believe it was 20,000 a day, as I recall, is the highest number that we've seen in Chicago. You know, Kansas City is much less, and St. Louis, I think, is a little more than Kansas City. But it all depends on how the railroads are operating and what type of contracts they have in place. So it varies. Paul, do you want to add something to that?
No, I think, there's been a recognition with a combination of some operational changes and obviously the economy, the floor dropping out in the economy quite a bit over the last couple of years, that the crosstown volume in Kansas City has dropped significantly. But it remains a major problem in Chicago. And we chose Kansas City, and I don't remember, Randy, if you'd mentioned that earlier on or not, but we chose Kansas City because the volumes were lower, so we could do a technical proof of concept here, and that we wouldn't get ourselves in a situation of potentially getting in and messing things up in Chicago, so to speak. This is such a delicate system there that we're confident if these systems prove out here, that they can accommodate the kind of volume that's seen in a place like Chicago, which, as Randy said, I believe the numbers were around 20,000 a day.
Yeah, you can access that website. I believe another question is going to we'll refer to that same case study we did. Go ahead.
Okay, Randy, I guess this one's more for you. There are no doubt that the goals of this project are solid, but should the federal government really be involved with increasing the efficiency of the trucking industry?
Well, this is where I'll refer back to what we were talking about earlier in my presentation in the Intermodal Freight Technology Working Group. This is where the federal government or my office has been very active in being the facilitator and convener. It's hard to get a group of people together, especially industry people, that to share ideas, and I think that's where we've come in. We've also been a facilitator of getting funding. I know there's a question coming up about funding, but we were able to put together, I believe, five different sources of funding from the federal agencies, and actually we had some funding from TSA involved in this. So there has been an ongoing effort of really managing and bringing together the ideas that were presented in IFTWG, continually building on those user requirements and user inputs, and then working with the local people, and I think it's been very successful so far.
And I'll just add to that and granted, I'm not speaking in any official capacity as a contractor here, but you know, as I said before, if you can improve the efficiency of the freight operations in metropolitan areas like Kansas City or Chicago or Los Angeles or New York or whatever else, you're without a doubt going to provide some benefit to a lot of other stakeholders, not the least of which is the citizenry in general. Reducing the number of truck trips that it takes to facilitate load movement, you know, that's more than just a noble undertaking. My argument is that absolutely it's an essential role for the Federal Highway Administration to help different locales understand the options they have to reduce congestion and reduce air quality, or rather improve air quality and reduce emissions. And the one point we didn't talk about was that there was a University of Michigan study done several years ago now that indicated that bobtails, which are trucks that aren't pulling any trailer, are five times more likely to be involved in an accident, in a crash. So there's a real potential public safety benefit as well by reducing the number of bobtails that are on the roadway. So, my argument would be that not only does FHWA or USDOT have a role, they have a responsibility in this area.
Yeah, one of the slides that I usually start off presentations with is how the growth of the freight volumes over the next 20 years will basically almost triple. And the only way that we can get some additional, of course, building capacity is very expensive. So to try to build some more efficiency in the network by using technologies like this certainly helps with that growth of the freight industry.
Okay. Have you quantified the expected environmental or traffic congestion VMT benefits?
Yes, that is, and I don't have it in front of me. It is available on the website, www.ctip-us.com. It's under the case studies, and Paul and his team wrote the case study, and it specifically talks about the VMT, the number of units that would be eliminated with, it's referring to the Chicago situation.
Okay. Are cleaner fuels and or lower emitting vehicle technologies factored into systems?
We actually have some funding from the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality that was provided to us through the Kansas City Metropolitan Planning Organization that we're focusing on how we can reduce the emissions, and we're actually going to be measuring that in our evaluation. What we're looking at, not necessarily cleaner fuels, but by the elimination of a trip, will be associated to eliminating so much emissions.
How does this work to avoid making truck drivers distracted by the new information fed to them through an iPhone?
One of the reasons that we picked the iPhone is that we can actually shut it off. If the truck is moving, the application will lock. Other than that, the information would be displayed similar to a Garmin as far as the information you need to see, but as far as touching the device or trying to interact with it while the truck is moving, the iPhone will be locked, so it cannot do that.
And we may try to experiment with some voice commands too to eliminate the distraction.
How does this interact with the carriers that are executing contract shipping? How much of the industry is not eligible for CTIP because of these contracts?
I really don't see where this is a factor in this. I mean, anybody that's exchanging information, and I mean, each one of these modules can be deployed independently. So if you don't use, say, the wireless or the chassis management system or the wireless component, that you could use the real-time traffic management piece, you could use the dynamic routing. So each one of these are individual modules, and will be available for everyone to use.
Any expectations on the lag from the data source to the onboard devices? Is there a performance window that the information must meet in order to be useful?
Paul,
I'll take this one. This is Paul. I think, you know, there's a recognition that, particularly from a traffic information and routing standpoint, that it's essential that the information be provided very quickly. We don't have a performance standard we're trying to meet necessarily, but I think it's safe to say that if you go beyond 10 minutes between when anomalies are detected and when they're reported to a user, then you're getting very close to them being useless. So what we're hoping for is that we are able to provide updates that include information that is less than 10 minutes old. That's a performance target, and I'm pretty confident that we can do that, again, partly because we're only looking at a portion of the network and not a huge volume of data. So that's what I would say that is a good threshold of performance. Now, there is a national proposed rulemaking that talks about the timeliness of traveler information. I would encourage folks to go take a look at that. You know, we're kind of using that as a general guideline in terms of timeliness, and I believe that the target there might be 15 minutes, but I'm not sure that's the case. I have to go back and revisit that, but we're shooting for a 10-minute maximum latency between when information is received about specific roadway conditions and when routing information is provided back as an absolute upper limit. You know, hopefully it'll be within the 1 to 2 minute time frame on average.
Okay.
I don't know. And I know that the load information that Ron is talking about has different implications, different time requirements, so I'll leave that to him to address.
What is the time frame and funding level for this project?
Well, this project was put forward by the IFTWG, I believe, in the fall meeting of 2004. And we've been working. We took a couple of years to actually write the concept of operations and do a simulated case study. And from that point, we started presenting it to different agencies, different groups, and to put together the funding. Right now, we have about $2.25 million of funding in place that we're working with, and we've had a lot of interested parties from different areas talking about doing the same type of project in their area. So hopefully, as we start to produce results here this spring and our late spring and early summer, we'll start looking for other areas to take this project to and secure additional funding.
Okay. Does this system accommodate oversized, overweight trucks? Does the routing optimization check for permits or load restrictions?
As of right now, it does not. It certainly could accommodate that. It's not. Those features aren't included in the original design. Very few of the loads. In fact, I'd have to check for sure. It may well be that none of the loads that any of the carriers that are participating in the project transport are over-dimensional. It's more likely they may be overweight than oversized, since most of the loads be containerized. It will not do it in its initial iteration, but nothing in the design or the development will prevent that from being accommodated in future releases.
Now, one of the points in the statement of work that we wrote in from the Federal Highway was that this is an open architecture, and any additional items could be developed could be used with this dynamic route guidance and RTTM.
Okay. You already mentioned that the iPhones lock when the engines are running, but are there any other considerations that have been made to prevent distracted driving?
Well, we've been working through it. We're looking at other areas. In fact, I'm looking at another project next week that's addressing the same situation. So, and I believe they're talking about using some voice commands. So, right now, I can't really answer that in detail.
I think it's important, Randy, to add to it that the funding for the WDU, that wireless interface unit, is coming from FMCSA, and of course, they're very sensitive to distracted drivers and the safety issues associated with it. So, they're an active partner in guiding the design so that it reduces the likelihood that the driver will be distracted by this device.
And also, with regard to the device, will the guidance system be subject to the AT&T coverage area, or will it have a wider coverage area like navigation systems have?
Well, since we're selecting the iPhone, we're limited to AT&T, but as I mentioned during my presentation, we're using this product from Vavni that has a gateway product that essentially allows you to use any type of PDA or smartphone. For this pilot specifically, we are using the iPhone, but going forward, if we move this to other cities, we can bring other smartphones into it, which would obviously open it up to other coverage areas besides AT&T.
Are there any efforts to organize industrial land use in order to minimize truck movements?
Not as part of this project. This is really a technology project.
Do you foresee the need to allow access to independent truckers, or will access be limited to trucking companies?
Great question. Some of the trucking companies that are involved in the project use only owner-operators. So they'll be, basically, units will be provided to what are effectively independent operations who simply contract their work out to the carriers that who are officially enrolled in the project. But yeah, I mean, eventually you want to make this available to anybody who can use it. At least from a traffic standpoint. Now, again, I'll defer to Ron regarding the load matching functionality.
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul. I mean, I say we're dealing with the companies, the trucking companies themselves, and as far as the, you know, they're participating in this project, but there's no limitation of including other independent companies as well. I mean, it's the trucking companies that we're using, they do use independent drivers to provide their various services. So there's no reason why we couldn't open it up to other any other company as well. Hopefully that addresses your question.
Okay, well, we don't have anything else typed in right now, but we do have some time left, so we'll go ahead and open the phone lines and see if anyone wants to ask a question over the phone. In the meantime, feel free to continue typing in questions. But if the operator could give instructions on how to ask questions over the phone.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name when prompted. To withdraw your questions, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment for the first question, please. Question will come from Ed.
Hi, Randy. Hi, Paul. I'm not sure who this would be good. This question will go for, but let me take a crack at you guys. Do you guys foresee creating any type of open source API to enable independent developer to come up with new ways of displaying and using your data?
That probably should go to Ron.
Well, this is Ron. The way this is being architected, we're using the software development language is Java. We are using the web services and essentially the a service-oriented architecture. It's kind of the basis of the way we've designed this. We'll have, between each of the applications, we'll be using web services. The APIs or the web services that we're developing for the connections to the KC Scout and some of the rail carriers, those will be open and available to use for anyone. That's really our approach on how we're connecting to outside sources through web services. And the XML flavor that we're using is UBL, Universal Business Language, adopted by the OASIS Standards Group.
Okay, so for somebody who wants to, say, create an Android-based application for some of the newer devices out there, would they have sufficient information to create a new application independently, or?
Well, I kind of mentioned that before, that we're using this VAVNI product, gateway product.
Okay.
That will allow, again, we're targeting the iPhone for this project. But using this gateway product, we can essentially target to any smartphone or PDA, and the gateway product will automatically make all the necessary adjustments so that it would work with any of that. It would work with a different phone. So
okay.
It wouldn't be a need for API the way you were suggesting, because the product that we're using will automatically take care of that.
Okay, thank you.
New question.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1.
We do have one more question that was typed in the meantime while we're waiting. Do you have an estimate for the cost to an independent driver?
We haven't come up with that. I mean, at this point, essentially you would have obviously you must be focusing just on the cost of the iPhone and your normal data services beyond that.
And do we have anything else over the phone?
At this time, there are no further questions.
And we just had another one typed in. Are management practices being utilized within terminals to reduce emissions, such as reducing idling or other inefficiencies?
I don't think that's something we can address here. I mean, there are certain policies in place with each one of the terminals, but I'm not familiar with exactly what policies are being enforced at each terminal. We really don't focus our project within the terminal. It's basically getting the information and sharing it so that the flow can happen between the terminals.
Okay, and is there anything come up on the phone?
At this time, there are no questions.
Okay, well, I think if we have no further questions, we'll go ahead and close out for today. While I'm reading these last few parts, if anybody does think of anything, feel free to type it in. We'll go back to it. But thank you, Randy, Paul, and Ron, for great presentations, and thank you, everybody, for attending today's seminar. The recording and the PowerPoints will be posted online within the next few weeks, and I'll send out an email once they become available. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and want to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for today's seminar, please make sure you were signed in with your first and last name, or if you were in a group and not logged in under your name, you could type it into the chat box. I did type in there that this seminar is not yet available on the AICP website, so if you were to try to go log in your credits for this one, you wouldn't be able to find it. It should be up within the next week or so, but I will send out an email once it is available for logging your credits. You can download the instructions for receiving your credits from the file share box, and please also download the evaluation form and email it to me after you've completed it. If you're not applying for AICP credits, you're also welcome to fill out the evaluation form. We always welcome your feedback. The next seminar will be held on February 17th and will be about the Empty Miles program. If you haven't done so already, I encourage you to visit the Talking Freight website and sign up for the seminar, and the address is up on the side on your screen. And I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't already done so. So with that, thank you to our presenters, and thank you everybody for attending, and enjoy the rest of your day.